This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Griplock, Foundation Disc Golf's weekly podcast. I'm Hunter, joined as always by Trevor. Got quite the show today. We're going to do a quick Swedish Open recap, talk about some of the storylines from there, go into a little Trevor's trivia, and then we have a Vino Makkala contract update. Someone translated an interview he did that had some details in there.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
New Latitude 64 disc technology announced.
Hit him with it.
Some questions from Twitter, and then... if we have time, we'll look at our top 10. But we're never looking at our top 10.
You know that.
The grippies have been pushed back to next week. Edwin Stats was going to pull a bunch of the grippy stuff for us.
Yeah.
I believe he said he was moving
Not
this weekend.
Not the grippies, though.
So, no, the mid-season grippies.
Mid-season speculation, grippy preview show,
yep.
Mid-season.
Yep. But before we get into today's episode, I want to take a moment to thank our sponsor. Are you tired of losing your favorite discs?
Yes.
We are too. Well, no more. We have found the perfect solution to getting our most cherished discs back. Homing Pigeon Disc Golf has developed a new way for us all to be reunited with our even our worst thrown discs into the thickest rough. The Homing Pigeon Disc Finder is a compact, lightweight device that pairs with a small all-weather locator sticker to find on your all of your hidden discs. The Homing Pigeon locating sticker is just that. It's a sticker. There's no bulky battery or power source to weigh down your disc. You simply walk towards your shot, and once you get within 20 feet, your disc finder will begin to beep and continue beeper faster and faster the closer you get until you locate your disc. No more losing discs buried under leaves. After finding enough discs, the Homing Pigeon Disc Finder just pays for itself, but that's not the main reason it was created. The reason why the Homing Pigeon Disc Finder was created was to get you your unique, perfectly beat-in, and sentimental disc back to you. You know, the one that flies just the way you like. The Homing Pigeon Disc Finder is now available on Kickstarter, and the best news of all is that the Disc Finder is a finished product. Your participation in Kickstarter campaign is a pre-order. As soon as the campaign ends, you will get your disc finder. Excuse me. As a sincere thank you to all the early backers, you're receiving an exclusive and sizable discount through Kickstarter.com. You can check it out at homingpigeondiscgolf.com or simply search Homing Pigeon on Kickstarter to get your Homing Pigeon today and never lose a disc again, because a disc in the hand is worth two in the bush. It's basically like a metal detector for your disc.
Yeah.
It's pretty sick. We were talking about this because, like, pretty much every time I've ever lost a disc, it's been the frustrating part of, like, I know it's right here.
Yeah.
And most of the time, no, it's not.
You just get buried.
That's actually one of the biggest benefits to me of the Homing Pigeon is, like...
That's true.
I'll know it's not right there.
That's true.
Because where I think, I'm like, I swear it was here, it would be beeping. So I can check that area super quick and be like, it must have kicked and rolled somewhere else.
I've never been a guy to own any of the tracking products, but I can't imagine how satisfying it is. Like, how many times you've lost a disc in, like... a situation especially where you literally watch it, know exactly where it is, but it's buried in leaves. How satisfying would it be to just track right to it and be like, ha!
Gotcha.
Sometimes I get angry at the disc.
Yeah. Like it's trying to run away from us.
Yeah, well, I hit it into so many trees.
Swedish Open this past weekend, we had James Proctor taking it down, his first Elite Series win. Joseph Andersson, Mari Vilman, and Paul McBeth all tied for second. And then in FPO, we had Silva Saarinen taking it down. I think it was like her fifth straight, if I'm not mistaken. Hinna Blomroos in second and Ella Hansen in third. Here's actually the Statmando tweet, because I think this is the big storyline in FPO, right? Is the most consecutive wins, FPO, DGPT, and DGPT silver, because there are European silver events still. The record holder is 7, which is Miss Paige Pierce from in 2017 through 2018. Then Paige also is in second with 5 in 2019. And then Silva Saarinen actually holds the next at 5 as well. So she's tied for second, only 2 wins away from tying Paige Pierce's record.
It's really important.
And then there's
really
a 3-way tie between Katrina Allen of 2016, Paige Pierce of 2020, and Kristen Tatar 2022 at 3. I'm surprised Kristen only has 3, to be honest with you.
I think, yeah, that just shows you, well... is it consecutive wins in starts or is it consecutive wins in, like, tournaments on the schedule?
That's a great question.
But even, I mean, that doesn't, I mean, it's tough. Like, 3 in a row, because Kristen only plays the big events typically. I mean, she plays, like, the offhand. Like, but as far as, like, I don't really feel like she was dabbling a lot in, like, the
silver. She didn't play many silvers, yeah.
So, it makes sense. Like getting four of those in a row would be insane. But that's a really impressive streak. And even though the field has not been full strength by any means, she's still beating Henna and Evelina.
And two of them, because the other three were silvers. And
that's right. That's right. But it's anytime you are able to do that, you're rattling off that many wins in a row. It's very impressive, and I think she's building a lot of hype right now, which is always good. You know, if we can gain anything from these kind of European split events, it's always fun to have these like little storylines. And I think one of them we're getting out of FPO right now is whenever Silva is back in, especially like when Kristen gets back in the mix and when she's back into a full field, we're going to be really looking at that, because it's like, well, I mean, when's she going to lose?
Yeah, you know? I mean, her last event that was in a full field was Champions Cup, and she came in fourth.
Yeah.
Before that, Music City Open ninth. Like, she's progressively gotten better to this.
What's next for her?
Her next event is the Finnish National Disc Golf Championships this weekend, which that'll be pretty well attended, but still not like a full field. Evelina and Henna will still be there. But her next Elite Series is the Crokhole Open. That's the next Elite Series that should be. I think this is Kristen's return, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, that's Kristen's return. Paige will be over there. It'll essentially be a full FPO field over there.
That'll be the one to watch.
The Crokhole Open, and then she's also signed up for the European Open after that. So
it's been a heck of a run.
She's getting hot at the right time. What I wanted to ask you is, so she, like we had said, both of her Elite Series wins, she has beaten Evelina and Henna.
Yeah.
In our top five currently, now this top five, again, our top 10 power rankings haven't been updated literally after Ella or Holland had won, if I'm not mistaken. So our top five.
That can't be possible.
I'm pretty sure that's true. Our top five is outdated regardless, so it's a little off. But Evelina Salonen, was the current number one player in the world, with Kristen Jatar holding the ghost spot, and Ella Hansen was currently in fifth. She beat both of them this weekend. She has beat Evelina at the last two Elite Series and beat Henna at the last two. Where do you have Silva as like the top FPO players in the world right now? Where does she fit for you?
I don't know. I mean, it's tough. It's tough when the field is split up like this, and like then you have certain players that are there getting beat a couple times, but certain ones that aren't. Based on the streak, you'd have to throw her in there somewhere. I just don't know what the right spot would be.
Yeah, in the world standings in the DGPT points, which they don't really update this nearly as often. No, they have the Swedish Open. Okay, good. So they are up to date, because the European silver events don't count towards the Worlds.
Yeah.
Just that she's at 14th, even with the two wins, which is crazy to me.
Yeah.
It's because she started the season, she didn't play the first three events, and then she went 34th, 23rd, and then after that, it's been all top 10. But really, I think it's because the...
Do they have the European stance on there?
I think I can change it to it. Up to 14 finishes will count. So that's what it is right now, is every event counts. By the end of the year, every event won't count. So as long as she plays more than 14, she'll be
first in that.
Yeah, she's first by a long shot in that. She has a almost 200-point lead in the Europe standing. But in the world standings, she's at 14. To me, I think she has to be in the top five, because if you look, like I said, Music City, ninth, Champions Cup, fourth, and then she hasn't lost since then, with two of the Elite Series having at least Evelina and Henna. Evelina is the number one points player in the world right now, by 3 points over Owen Scoggins. So to beat her two different times, you know, you got to give credit there. And Henna Blomroos is also up there.
This middle of the season Europe stretch that has like half the field here. I really don't like it, because it's throwing. We spend all the beginning of the season building out these narratives and like getting a grasp on the season, and then the field all splits up, and now it's like it creates like this memory block. Like you have all these weeks of like inconsistency, and you're trying to remember what happened in the beginning of the season, and it becomes impossible. I don't like it.
Well, let's actually talk about that now, because I was planning on talking about that at post MPO, but we can lean into it now, because FPO, I feel like it started happening. Kristen left, Evelina and Henna left.
I don't blame them, to be clear. Like they're from
It's not there. It's no players' fault. Yeah. It's the Pro Tour's fault. But they left, right? And the FPO field was immediately, you felt the difference. Like even the U.S. events, the FPO field, it's been a wounded field. And then you have the same in the Europe events, it's a wounded field. So both, neither event. MPO-wise, you hadn't felt it nearly as much until this weekend. Because, like I said, James Proctor took it down. That talked about his win. But in the field, you had, let me start by ratings, Calvin Heimberg, Ricky Wysocki, Eagle McMahon, Nicholas Antela, Paul McBeth, Bradley Williams, Joseph Anderson, Jakub Semerad, James Conrad, Vino Makala. I think that's about where the like notable MPO touring pros go. All of them are over there, right? So that means Des Moines coming up this weekend, all of them are not going to be there. Calvin Heimberg is registered, but unless he's doing some weird flight back and forth, he's just registered.
That'd be impressive.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening. So Calvin's over there. So then over here you have the best, like Gannon, Simon, Chris Dickerson. Like the both fields now are drastically wounded.
Yeah.
Because now you're missing, like Calvin and Ricky have just started getting hot, right? Now they're gone to Europe. And then you have Gannon over here and AB and Simon and guys, but like, this is the first event where in MPO we're really going to feel both sides. What's your take on this overall? And is it something that the Pro Tour like should be concerned about, is concerned about, or like, do you think that they love it?
I don't know. I mean, my issue has never been with them going to Europe. I don't think there's a problem with that. I think it makes a lot of sense to be catering to that pool of viewership and like that those fans, because it's important to do that as a sport. Like there's so many people passionate about disc golf over there, you should cater to that. But my problem is when things get split up, and for such a long time, I almost feel like the way to go is to split it harshly enough and like to a point where there's nothing going on that you like. Let's say European Open is the finale. Have like three pro tours in a row in Europe that are big enough that like the top half of the field, like the most important part of the MPO field and FPO field, are going no matter what. Like they just have to go. Like it's if they don't go, they're just missing such a big chunk of the tour. Because then we get these events that might not be as deep, but everybody that we'd want to see playing is there. And I know you can never like force them to go, but if you made it more dramatic, like if Des Moines wasn't there for them to be playing, like I almost would rather have that. Whereas right now you have, they're leaving them options on U.S. soil. So it's like, you're always going to have the split field. Because some people are like, yeah, Europe sounds cool. And some people are going to be like, I don't want to go to Europe until I absolutely have to or ever. So I don't know. I don't know if there's a win though, because there is enough high level disc golfers that aren't going to make that trip. But I think you could try and force their hand more. But then like you mentioned, the question is, what is the Pro Tours, where are their chips? Like, what do they care about? And I don't really know.
Yeah, I personally really, really dislike the scheduling, how it currently sits, because the European disc golf,
all over the place.
Right, European disc golf is great to watch. It's fantastic, right? But like the courses over there have a different feel. The way they carry themselves, very professional events, the commentary is different. Like, it has a fully different feel. I think that should just be we're in the Europe swing of the tour.
Yeah, I'd be totally fine with that.
Because what happens there is, Gannon decided not to travel, Dickerson decided not to travel, okay. But, like, you have a deep enough portion of the field that is going to travel. Because, like, right now, let's just run through this, right? How this is all happening is you have the Dynamic Disc Open was May 3rd through May 5th. Then May 10th through May 12th, you had the Copenhagen Open. That's the first one. Then May 17th through 19th, you have the OTB Open. So right now, you're putting players in a position where basically, do I want to play Copenhagen or OTB? Because again, players aren't flying over and flying back. So that's, quote, decision number one. Majority of the field chose OTB. Makes sense. That event has some history, because right after that, you also had the Portland Open, Beaver State. Okay, well, then you have Beaver State, ends June 9th. Turku Open starts June 14th. Okay, that's fine. So I can play Beaver State. I can go to Turku. But then you have the Preserve, June 21st.
Yeah, it's like...
So
it's
now the, it's like...
It's
now
multiple. Like, yeah. If it was just one of those little weird skippers, like, that would be one thing. But literally, back, forth.
Because then, at that point, you had some players start going over there, right? So they're missing out Preserve to go over there.
It's like it just slowly goes
And now you have the Swedish Open, and more players are going over there. And the Swedish Open happens, right, June 28th, so a week after the Preserve. Okay, and now this weekend we have Des Moines, a week after that. And then we finally have the actual European swing, which is the Crokul Open, and then the European Open, and then the European Disc Golf Festival, and then we come back to Ledgestone. So that swing makes sense, right? The Crokul Open is going to be very well attended. The European Open is going to be very well attended. The European Disc Golf Festival, that'll be an interesting one to see. Are people staying there, or are people coming back and trying to get... Because Ledgestone's such a huge event. Like, it won't surprise me if players are coming back after Europe to make sure they have a week to adjust and not be jet lagged. But it at least, like, that grouping makes sense. To me, that's how it should be.
I just want to know from like a, because like,
because it's also screwing Des Moines.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's a bummer for the people who want to go out and watch that and don't get to see the full field. I just want to know, like, you have to believe that the Pro Tour, while part of their mindset, of course, is like, well, we just want to, like, you know, be united with kind of the European Tour and like showcase that, but they have to be thinking monetarily. You know, they're trying to make money. There has to be something monetary that is driving them over there, and I'm wondering what it is. Like, is getting them to throw so many events on the Pro Tour schedule? Why do they want players in Europe so often?
What I think it is I think that they saw the European and Pro Tour picking up steam. They felt semi-threatened by it because of how strong the presence in Europe. They had an opportunity to make a move now and bring it under their house.
Yeah.
But probably within that, they're like, well, we need our tour. Like, for the European Disc Golf Pro Tour, the only reason we're going with the Pro Tour is if they're Pro Tour events.
Right.
And so, to me, I personally think that it was a rushed move. That it was a, we need this to happen because the Pro Tour is scared of Europe taking over and taking market share. And so they took it. And they were like, well, we already have these dates set. And they're like, we'll make it work. And they just adjusted what they could adjust to, like, make it to be this back and forth schedule. And it wasn't a thought out, well planned. Because now what you're doing is you're serving two A-minus products, we'll call it, right? Yeah. Between, like, now we have Des Moines, and which both are solid. You have Des Moines and you just had Swedish Open. And then I think the Crow Call sets next. Like, they're all solid. Well, but you could have A-plus products if you would have scheduled it correctly.
Not to mention if you – we just had a press release – a few days ago, but the Finnish national championships are going to be covered, and it's going to be the first ever, I believe it's going to be the first ever simulcast. Like, they're going to be having,
yeah, they're doing that during Des Moines.
It'll be the only, yeah, during Des Moines, it'll be the only dual coverage weekend. So they're going to be running two different events. So that's what I'm saying. It's like they're splitting up their viewers.
Which that'll at least...
So, I just like...
Timing-wise, I don't think it'll run too much. Like, FPO should be ending around the time FPO is starting and same MPO.
Most people are not going to watch the entirety of both events. So, I'm just like... And I guess... I need to pay closer attention. Like, are they rolling out the exact same advertising packages on the European courses? Or are they double-selling? There's a real question.
They got to be double selling because they're not. We talked about this with Turku, but they're not as integrated.
Right.
So like,
so,
there's not people that
so
are paying.
So we're double selling. That makes sense. From okay, maybe that's what they stand to gain here. But then if you're dual covering, now you're splitting up your viewership. That's like, that's rough. For
but
them.
If you look at there the way the pro tour, which I don't know if this is smart or dumb. This is up for you to decide. The way they sell their packages and price out their live coverage packages is based on number of subscribers, not number of viewers. I think the feel I get is that they don't want to show how many viewers they get. So when you can find their package online, I think it's still there, but you'll see like 55,000 pro DGN subscribers.
Here's a take for you.
But it's like, there's not 55,000 concurrent watchers.
Yeah. Here's the take then. Is that the reason why the Pro Tour is failing to sell to any kind of bigger company? Because that bigger company is not going to take that number. They're going to want the exact viewers. And then when they get them, are they going to go, huh, that's hilarious?
Maybe. I don't know.
That's probably because if you throw their subscriber number around, it's pretty impressive. If you toss that around to a disc golf company, I mean, first of all, the disc golf company is already more motivated regardless. But then that might just be how that's marketing, just to bring those in. But like any big company is not going to look at that and be like, yeah, that sounds fine. They want to know the actual activation, what's going to hit.
It is interesting because again, if we want to talk about double coverage and cannibalizing viewers, that's what post-produce does every week.
It's true.
So it's another thing of just the DGN, I think, has an identity crisis and really needs to lock in who they are, what they're trying to serve, what they're trying to do, the Disc Golf Pro Tour in general, because they're getting pulled in so many different directions, and they have post-produced coverage. They have these highlights that are taking viewers away from post-produced coverage. They have the DGN live coverage, and then they have the European coverage that's taking players and viewers away because of the way it's scheduled. And it's like, if you're one tour, then it needs to be treated as one tour.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you schedule the events in a way that makes the most sense and players don't go, well, now that's the player's fault. But right now you're scheduling it in a way that doesn't make sense And so some players do go and some players don't go, and the fans are the ones that get screwed, and it's the Pro Tour's fault. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, well, of course you aren't, like James Proctor, we'll talk about his win here in a second. Like you can't discredit the guy's win because he went and beat the guys that were there, but it's the Pro Tour's fault that people will discredit his win because he beat a worse field than had they scheduled it a way that the whole field could be together.
Right.
Because it's like you're making players choose, do I want to stay and play Des Moines and then decide if I want to go to Europe, or am I doing this bouncing back and forth? And then for James and I think Eric Oakley, they went over and like decided not to play, I think it was Beaver State. Mm-hmm. And it's like you're making players decide against different events. And I don't see how anyone's happy in that regard, because no one's getting an event that's as good as they could had it been scheduled right.
Yeah, it's very interesting because, and at the end of the day too, you know, the tour, you're as far as like the end product, right? Think about how many people are viewing on site versus how many people are going to watch live and then post produce. 90-some% probably of the viewers are going to come from view the product. And it doesn't matter where it happened, right? So them just making the decision to have all these events in Europe just to – now you're catering to the more players out there. Like, is that what it's about? Is it about we want to take care of these players and give them a platform? Is it about the – like, it's just such a large amount of viewers. Like, I feel like you should be prioritizing the best possible product for your – just the people that are going to be watching it online.
The other thing that's interesting to me, too, is – they outsourced the coverage of the Europe events to MDG Media, the post-produced.
Yeah.
So, whereas the Pro Tour obviously owns Jomez, right?
Wait, what would... Go back to that. Are we... 3,000 views?
That's the top 10 shots.
Yeah, but still.
No, it's terrible. Well, Jomez is a whole different thing to dive into. They're killing themselves with thumbnails.
The thumbnails
are awful. How would I ever know... This is I've talked about this a number of times.
I don't understand why they don't.
It's the worst thing
I've
ever. Yeah, it's the worst. One of the worst business decisions that's ever been made is the Jomez thumbnails.
You have no idea what video you're clicking on.
No. Yeah. Like I mean, it just. I mean, people, the Grow the Sport people have to be pissed because like this is killing the Grow the Sport movement, because like why am I as a non-disc golfer ever clicking on that thumbnail? Anyways. Off my soapbox.
That's crazy.
So let's just look. MPO, the final round, front nine, preserve, 146,000 views. Back nine, 142,000 views for Jomez, right? Okay. Well, then the Swedish Open. Actually, we probably shouldn't do Swedish. Well, let's do the Swedish Open with Paul, because I think that's their best bet. Because if we do round three, it just posted 20 hours ago. That's not a fair shake. So let's do round one, because round one is the most viewed one. 68,000, 36,000. So it's like half the views. If you put Paul on Jomez, because that card was pretty sick. It was Joseph Anderson, Nicholas Antola, Linus Carlson, and Paul McBeth on that first card. You do have to think on Jomez it's pulling more views. I mean, a Jomez MPO round front nine hasn't gotten...
Well, his face wouldn't be in the thumbnail, so nobody wouldn't know.
That's true. That's a good point, Trev. Points to Trev. But it hasn't gotten less than 120,000 views all year.
How can you scroll through that and be like, yeah, this is it?
Man. And they're putting so much more effort into designing a different thing for them. It doesn't matter. Anyways, that is another curious point to me. Is like,
those are great.
MDG Media, they're not to discredit, they're doing a phenomenal job, right? Their coverage is awesome. But why not license them or hire them to do the production and post it on Jomez?
Do you think they sold the rights, though?
Maybe, but I'm just saying, like, you're splitting your audience into so many different places. Like, it just doesn't...
It's been a weird one.
It just doesn't make sense to me.
It's been a weird few weeks of Wild West disc golf.
Just all that doesn't make sense. But regardless, let's get back into the disc golf side, right? James Proctor took down his first Elite Series win in what is the strongest European event of the year so far. Again, we expect the Crokhole Open and some of the ones coming up to be stronger, but... What do you think of this wins in regard to strength? Because it is his first Elite Series one.
Yeah.
Since it doesn't have the typical strength of field, it's lower than the worst Pro Tour event. Dynamic Disc Open, I think, came in at 30 or 40-something, and this was at 35, if I remember correctly, on Statmando's strength of field scale. But it did have Calvin, Ricky, Paul, Eagle, and Niklas in the field.
Yeah.
Which helps.
Yeah.
So where do you put this in regards to typical strength of field?
It was impressive. Now, I do think there's always something to be said. Like, as we mentioned, he's been over there a few weeks, right? He has been.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, some of those players just arriving, I don't like to just be like, well, jet lag. But I feel like it does take a little bit to adjust when players first get over to Europe and start playing. It's a different style course. It's a long travel to get over there. Like, it can be exhausting, honestly. And so I don't know that everybody would be clicking at full strength yet. However, still talented people in the field. Paul played well, had a bad second round, but like, it was challenging. You know, Joey Buckets was putting on a good display as well. So I would give him definitely the most credit of any of these Europe wins we've had so far. I'm not willing to say it's on the tier of any of the full strength pro tours we've had, not by any means, but it was, I mean, he threw the disc really well. He typically does play pretty well in Europe, and James Proctor's a good player too. It's not like, you know, he has notched his name on the list of guys and girls who get their first elite series win in a kind of an event that definitely gave them better odds. But he's not somebody that, like, if he had just won and the Preserve or something else or whatever it might be, I wouldn't have just been like shocked, like, oh my gosh, James Proctor won. So, you know, I think he's shown enough that we can see he's capable of winning. And yeah, there were names out there, so it's a legit win. I like I said, not full strength for me, not like a full win, but I'd say like a I can't remember what we rated the other ones on a scale.
It was like a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, 6 out of 10, like a 0.6 out of 1.
Yeah,
is that what we did? I'd give this like a 0.78.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
0.78 out of 10.
Because I think the tough part is Gannon not being over there. I think had Gannon been over there, it ticks it a little bit more.
In a season, I was going to say, in a season where you do have a couple players, well, at this point, really, AB and mostly Gannon, who have been like the guys and they aren't there, that's tough. But you do have Ricky over there. You have Calvin over there, like people that, and Nicholas, like winners. So that's always going to be there, but it is tough when Gannon is like absolutely on fire right now, and he wasn't there.
Yeah, so I think that's the only knock against it, because Ricky, number two player in the world, this is all according to the Pro Tour standings. Ricky number two, Nicklaus number three, Calvin number five, all present. You're just missing Gannon, and AB, to Proctor's credit as well, hasn't really been the AB at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
He did come in 7th at Preserve, but 61st, 44th, 18th, 14th were all before that.
Yeah.
Not saying those are bad finishes, but they're not the first, fourth, fourth, first that he started with.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that at this point in the season, though, the Europe events, like Des Moines, is going to have the same asterisk next to it. If Gannon goes out and wins, like, yes, he's a proven winner. Yeah, you can say whatever, but like, he's not going to have to beat Ricky and Calvin, which are like his two guys. So it's not like it's because it's a Europe event. It's because of the field.
Gannon, and correct me if I'm wrong, he's from Iowa, right? It's not Idaho. He's from Iowa.
It's one of the two.
They're both, almost positive.
They're
from
both
Iowa.
The same to me. I know they're not close to each
he's
other.
He's definitely from Iowa. He wears the Iowa State shirt, doesn't he?
No clue.
Oh, my gosh.
I can look him up. I'll look him up.
Please look him up. I'm almost positive he's from Iowa.
Iowa. Thank Urbandale. Goodness.
So, as I was saying,
how far is Urbandale from Des Moines? We used to do this with Kevin Jones.
I'm just saying, in any case, Gannon Burr, as well as he's been playing in a weakened field in his
14 minutes. He's from Des Moines,
in his home state, to where he'll be able to
home
like,
city.
He'll be able to like stay at his like parents' house or whatever. That's, I mean, bet the house.
Yeah, you gotta like Gannon.
That
Burr.
Is, he's got it. If you disc win percentage, it'd be like 180%.
Yeah, you gotta like Gannon Burr this weekend for sure. But same thing has to be said about Gannon as James Proctor. Obviously, Gannon will be in a deeper field, but he's still going to be missing the guys that he has to beat week in and week out right now.
Yeah.
So you do have to factor that in. We'll have to keep that in mind for player of the year, end of the year points stuff.
Keep it in mind.
Final big storyline I wanted to bring up was Calvin Heimberg, 44th place finish, last cash. Thoughts on this? Just an
jet
anomaly?
Lag.
You're knocking it all up to jet lag.
Listen, whenever you travel to Europe, like I said, and I'm not trying to like discredit James Proctor by saying this, but whenever you travel to Europe, I'm always giving people that first event. Give me his round breakdown. What did he do round to round?
Let's look at him.
Maybe he just blew up round one. I'm giving everybody like a free pass on that first
Calvin event. Went 57, 56, 62. Final round was really what?
He's hurt.
You think he's hurt?
Jet lag and and an injury. I'm sick, guys, by the way. Well, I'm getting over it. I'm sure you already commented at this point.
That means I'll be sick by next week's grip.
No, but I'm getting over it, though, so I don't think it's...
That means I'll be sick by next week's grip launch.
It's dead.
Okay, so there, that wraps that up. I did want to mention, I used the proctologist on Twitter. Someone did also comment. You have to look at my Twitter if you want to see it, because someone commented the hand position goes is crazy. Because I said the proctologist is the way his hand's up. Very funny. But people are not liking the proctologist nickname.
I think
I've been calling him that for a long time.
We've been saying that forever.
Yeah. Someone said, nope. Yep, still the worst attempted nickname of all time. Please stop this.
I don't think is the worst attempt
still
of all time.
Still time to delete
Come
this.
Come on, guys.
Been sitting on that,
that was
for a while.
William Doyle.
I know, Reb. Unbelievable. But yeah.
We've been saying it, man.
Screw off with his nickname. Name proctologist. His last name is Proctor. It just works.
It just works. I just got a text from Art.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Denver, Colorado, intel on our opponents. Do you want me to announce it? It's a pretty big deal.
Oh, okay. Sure, why not?
All right.
This is news to me too.
So we're playing, we're doing a bogey rope battle in Denver at the end of the year. At the end of the month, my bad. July 27th to be exact. So if you live in anywhere in Colorado or elsewhere, make your way out there. I don't know one of these names, but I know the other one.
I'm guessing Joe Revere.
It's Joe Revere.
Oh, heck yeah. We locked him in.
Yeah.
He's going to kill us.
Masters world champion many
Joe
years
Revere,
in a row.
Joe Revere is the greatest non-tour player, in my opinion. I don't know if that's true.
He's incredible.
Let me just read you this guy.
He's like 1038 rated or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, he's disgusting. Joe Revere, let's see. 1036 rated.
He's insane.
So far this year, he's lost twice. The 303 Open, he came in second. In the Top Shelf Disc Supply, he came in second. Outside of that, he's won everything. Let's see who he lost
to. The other guy on the team, I'll shout him out, is Lucas Carmichael, and he's 1,000 rated.
He's the guy, he beat Joe Revere in one of the two events. We're dead. We're getting on a flight to Colorado to die.
We're going to get killed, bro.
Lucas Carmichael. It's going to be a great time.
Anytime you set up one like this, because we've never, correct me if I'm wrong, but other than playing Brody and Ezra, like we've never had a matchup like this.
No.
Actually, if you average the ratings, probably pretty close to Brody and Ezra's.
Probably pretty close. So Joe Revere's two losses this year have come to Lucas Carmichael, who we're playing against him with, and Aaron Gossage. Those are his two losses.
Joe Revere is like...
He's a legend.
He's mysterious, because he's just out there not torn and just wins.
He's a legend, yeah. And he's won a lot of Masters Worlds.
Dude.
I've always heard about people playing against him and just like, he's just disgusting. He's won 3 Masters Worlds in a row and just mops up A tiers like nobody's business.
July 27th, be there.
Yeah. So, we want as big of a gallery as we can get.
Could you imagine?
If you're in the area, come watch us get.
Well, now people are just going to want to see us
slapped around.
Because
we've also never played at elevation like that on top of it all.
Yeah, we're going to be going in blind.
I can't wait. That's incredible.
I mean, this could be our biggest margin of defeat of all time.
We've never lost.
Pending.
We can go ahead. The good news is we have a whole flight come up with the technicalities.
Technicalities.
Yeah. I can already think of a few.
Yeah.
But all right, it's time for the fan favorite segment, Trevor's Trivia. What do you got today?
Well, you know. Who are we playing? I'm just kidding. Okay. This is actually, you were just looking at the world standings, so you probably have a better chance at this than if not. This is the way this game works. I have 5 different ranges of positions in the standings.
Okay.
It starts with like an easy one, and they progressively get harder. So the first one is between 1 and 5, and then they are going to get harder to further down the rankings and also smaller gaps.
Oh, okay.
Your goal is to... first, you have to tell me how many you think you can name in that range.
Oh, boy.
and then name them. And your goal is to get as many in between as
possible. But I don't lose if I get one wrong.
No, as soon as you get wrong, when you lose.
Oh, as soon as I get one wrong, I lose.
Correct. So I want this is for the listeners to play along. Play along with Hunter because his goal is to beat you. So your first one is 1 in 5.
I think I can get 4.
You're just going for 4. And yeah, you obviously do not have to get the exact position.
Gannon, Ricky, Anthony Barella, Calvin Heimberg.
Gannon, Ricky, Barella, Heimberg.
Yeah.
Okay. The top. Gannon is number one.
Bonus point, I think, as Robinson's 5th.
No, Heimberg was 5th.
Okay,
so you got in by 1. Antela is 3rd.
Antela is the guy I missed.
Yeah.
Okay. But see, that's why I only did four. Is Ezra 6?
Also, I shouldn't say anything else.
Okay.
Because I don't want to give you spoilers for later. Okay, your next gap, 10 and 20.
I'm a dead fish. I'm dead. I don't even want to say one.
You could probably get one.
But I just don't know. I just don't know.
Because you have to get one to move on. So you can just say one.
Between 10 and 20. My brain is just so fried.
Yeah, we've had
sleep today.
We've had quite a day.
Let me just, may I take a brief intermission just to read? Because this is funny because it shows you how little I slept last night. I sent it to my friend. This is my wife's text to me with timestamps. Okay? Because she thought I had my phone on me while I was in the room trying to get my son back to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have my phone on me. So I didn't see any of these till this morning. So she was texting me because I couldn't, obviously there's no way for me to communicate with her. She said, just rock him for like 5 minutes at 3:55 a.m.
Okay.
4:40 a.m., just bring him in here. 4:49 a.m., bring him in here so we can go to bed. 4:55 a.m., if you want to sit up in there, that's fine, but I really think you should just bring him in here. 4:57 a.m., Hunter, also 4:57 a.m., bring him in here. And then at 5 a.m., my alarm went off because that's when I was planning to run this morning. And so she got up out of bed to turn my alarm off and walked down the hallway and came in the room where Luca's room is, like, can you just bring him in our room? Why aren't you looking at your phone? I was like, my phone's on the dresser. She's like, I've been texting you. I was like, ah. So I was just sitting there. Luca just didn't want to go to bed for, what was that, an hour and like 20 minutes, middle of the night?
That's resilience.
And then I had to get up at 6 to make it to the meeting this morning.
There you go. And now you need
to figure out between 10 and 20. That's a really hard range.
It's a big range.
I feel like I have a better chance in the top 10.
It's definitely like a trap card of like you definitely don't want to go too aggressive here. I think your best bet is to be like, who would be just outside the top 10?
I feel
the top 10 are like all
really hard.
The top 10 are all like,
okay, I'm just going to throw some names and kind of go down the list here because I think, but the problem is you have some players. Is a win good enough to get you in the top? Can you give me the points of the person in 20th? Is that fair?
Uh-huh, sure. 362. Because
Presnell would have got like 150 for winning.
This is 10 through 20.
Simon hasn't played enough. Paul's been trash. Who are the players that are just like, can't quite put it together? Ooh, okay. This is rough. Give me Aaron Gossage.
Correct.
Number
16.
Wow, right in the middle.
Right in the middle.
All right. Look, luckily, I only did one.
You're only going for one?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I forgot to say one. Yeah, one.
Your
Aaron
next
Gossage
range is between 6 and 9.
One. Ezra Robinson.
He's number 6.
Yeah.
You're just trying to survive. I respect
that. I'm trying to survive.
Your next range is between 21 and 28.
Like, I'm losing here for
sure. I didn't know how well you would know the fringe.
I'm losing here for sure.
Sometimes we talk about the fringe.
One, Andrew Presnell.
Presnell's 10th.
Wow. Okay, that win did a lot. Well, I guess he had some great finishes after.
Yeah. He did. I mean,
so would
this year
would Jesse Nieminen fallen in that range?
In the end range there?
Yeah.
21. Yeah, 28th. Dang, you had it too.
Dang.
Looking at it when I was
what
writing
about Simon Lizotte?
29.
Ah, so he'd been just out.
Yeah, just out. You had a pretty good idea then. Paul, for example, was in that 10 to 20 range.
Really?
I'll give you the people that are in there. So Presnell's at 10. Then you have Joseph Anderson, Matty O.
Joseph Anderson. I could have got
Dickerson,
him.
Chris Dickerson, Cole Rodallin, Gavin Babcock. You could have got Gavin Babcock. Ezra Aderholt, James Proctor at 20.
Could have got Proctor.
Then your next,
the rest of them I would not have got.
Your next range is Marweed, Yuli, Luke Humphreys, Casey White, Mason Ford. Surprised Mason Ford.
I forgot all those players existed.
You're fried. Your brain is.
My brain's fried. Couldn't think of anything.
It's been a long day.
It's been a long day. You know, let me tell you actually part of our day, because we have announced, you've seen it by now, the Ace-a-thon, the Dark Horse Ace-a-thon Zone has officially been announced. It's dropping over at foundationdisc.com this upcoming Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Basically what this disc is, it's an ESP Flex Jawbreaker Zone. They feel really incredible. I brought one. Thank you.
Brain's toast.
Here she is. Here's the stamp. Super excited about this. We're partnering with Discraft on this disc and Brody. They're dropping on our site, foundationdisc.com. And part of why my brain's fried is for the promo that you saw, we wanted to get an Ace with our phone instead of the Ace that we used, because we had that Ace in the bank. But we went out to hole 3 at Peaksview and we were out there for about 3 hours. And guess in the comments down below, based on my next statement, which baskets we were throwing on. I think that's fair. We had 7 chain outs in those 3 hours and 0 of them stuck. So very frustrating, emotional time. Not the disc's fault. The disc, again, got to the basket 7 times. 7 times. 7.
Yeah, we're in a rough place.
Didn't go in. You can guess which basket it was. But super excited about that. How it's going to work is basically you, your buddy, whoever picks up the disc. Spoiler alert, we had 10 of them. Gonna probably want to have, I'm not saying you need 10, but you're probably gonna want a few of them if you want to enter the Ace-a-thon, but you're gonna want to enter the Ace-a-thon. How you enter is you get a video by the end of the month of yourself acing with this disc. Tag us and Discraft on social media when you post it. We're gonna pick the top 5. All 5 will receive a prize, and then our viewers are gonna vote on the number 1 ace, the best ace, and that ace is going to receive a grand prize, which is collaboration between us and Discraft on just massive prize, which will be announced later this week. So we're super excited about that. But you don't have to get the disc to be, you have to get the disc to be in the Ace-a-thon, but you don't have to be in the Ace-a-thon if you get the disc. The disc is just a great time. It's our first run in like 2 years. It's a really fun stamp, a great feeling zone. It flies like an ESP zone, so dead straight with a little bit of finish at the end. Great for just ripping forehands, approach shots, stuff like that. Phenomenal disc. Foundationdisc.com, 5 p.m. Friday. Don't miss out. So I wanted to talk about this because we had a little Vino Makala contract update that I thought brought some interesting details. I saw this actually posted on our Foundation Nation Facebook page. If you're not a part of that, you miss out on posts like this, where he translated, this is Apelli Atras translated Vino's interview from Frisbee Golf Media that was published last Saturday. And he said he translated the whole interview to Reddit this morning, but got permabanned for some reason. Don't know why. Anyways, about Vino Makala's contract with Innova, deal was in the making for 6 months before it was finalized. Interesting detail there.
That is interesting.
Biggest motivation behind the move was the need for change. Vino says that everything was fine and he was comfortable with Prodigy, but maybe too comfortable and had lost the spark, the edge, and wanted to ignite his motivation and turn a new page career-wise. Pause for the first one. Isn't he the guy that signed in December the extension with Prodigy?
I don't remember.
I think he was, because I thought he was the guy that like bought the... I thought he bought a BMW with it. Like, remember that?
But based on what we know, I feel like the problem was that his contract, when it was signed originally, was the
problem. Okay, no, he was signed in 2022.
Yeah.
2022, he signed a contract. So I must be thinking of, maybe I'm thinking of Niklas bought the, maybe he bought the BMW. Anyways.
Somebody's got a BMW.
So, Vino calls Innova the biggest and best disc manufacturer in the world, saying he originally started playing disc golf with Innova Discs, so this feels like a long-awaited dream come true.
Dang.
New deal with Innova covers the rest of this season and then the 25, 26, and 27 seasons. So he signed a four-year deal with Innova. That's crazy.
What the heck?
Financially, Vino seems to be very satisfied and content with his new deal. He says he can't disclose the nuances, but says that it would not have made sense to make the switch if the new deal would have been financially worse than what he had with Prodigy. Those are his words.
This is crazy.
Also, he says that he can choose whichever pasta he wants and eats only the best, most premium cottage cheese available when shopping for food. The smile on his face when talking about finances tells a lot. So I guess he was saying, like, I'm buying the best food available. You can put the two and two together. That's well, where we're at as a, as, let me, a let me, that's where we're at as a world that, like, the pasta you're eating tells how rich you are.
Let me tell you why this is very interesting is because from what we heard from Kale that we broke last week was he was one of two, like, now he wasn't.
Kale didn't know the details of Binos, though.
He didn't know specifically, but it seemed like it was a similar situation where, like, that was another deal that they had to get off their books.
Let me see if I can find. There was a comment.
And, like, okay, yes, I can believe there's a win-win where, like, they have to get them all their, but Inova wants it. But, like, Inova's usually not those guys.
Usually mean, not.
A four-year deal? A four-year deal? Like, you don't get a four-year really awesome deal but if you're getting
one thing
get
I will
basically
say
released.
Is when we had talked about when we had talked about the him leaving Prodigy, one of the reasons it was so surprising to me was that he was such a big face to the European market. So it could be that, like, he is just worth
is Vinyl
that
just
much
like
to
crazy popular over
that much to Inova. I was trying to see, someone had commented something very interesting on our on our post last week. They were saying that the Prodigy Europe's financials have to be public because where they're based in Finland.
Right.
I could find where they were public, but I couldn't find the actual, like, details. Like, you had to have special qualification.
Interesting.
But they had commented some, like, numbers that made you think they must have had the qualification to see it. So I really would like to see that because they thought that it was, well, the way they worded it was very interesting. Shoot.
Too many comments.
Too many comments. Too many people.
I just don't like.
Okay, let me see if I can I search comments on
it's
here.
It's a really weird situation.
I can't search comments. Dang it. There's basically, they worded it somewhere along the lines of Prodigy Europe. They thought it lined up because they had, like, operated at a loss last year. Their sales this year were down like 40-some percent or something like that. Or in 2023, their sales were down 40-some percent. And that Vino made up 10% of their top-line revenue. So whatever their top-line revenue was, right, Vino's contract was 10% of it.
I mean, hey.
Meaning it had to be pretty decent because from what I understand, Prodigy Europe is pretty big.
It could just be Spin Zone where it's just like, you know what, maybe he.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Didn't even get a four-year deal. Maybe it's only a one-year deal. It's just like,
well, I mean, then he's just lying.
That's a four-year deal, man.
That would just be called
what
lying.
If, well, no. What if it's a one-year deal, but it could be 4 years and up to a certain amount of money based on performance?
Who knows? Very, very interesting, though. But I thought was all translated.
He's eating the best cottage cheese.
Yeah, so I love that. That's funny.
That is really funny.
Another big announcement came from Latitude 64. They said reveal time. They called this Project Grip. This project
kind of
has
a
been
trash graphic.
Yeah, it is. I was very surprised they used this, but
font though
is pretty awful. Reveal time. This project has been in the works for some time. We've had a patent pending, and then they write the patent pending number for this new production technique since 2022. With the ability to combine and fuse two different plastics in the same mold, we're opening up a world of possibilities. Our focus with Project Grip has been to develop a disc with the most exceptional grip without making the disc become too soft and wobbly. The grippy skin on the top and bottom of the flight plate combined with a stiff, torque-resistant rim will definitely be a game-changer for those looking for the ultimate grip. We have more to show in the next couple of days, and July 10th will be your chance to try from yourself. All the best from Latitude 64 Disc Design Team. May I say my thought on why this was posted the way it was posted? I think that they got beat to the market with Tone Plastic. So I think they felt rushed. Because it's not the exact same. But it's a similar concept where there's two different plastics in the same mold. The one's more stiff, one's more grippy.
You're talking about the flight plate, though. The top and the bottom of the flight plate. Whereas Tone.
No. The top and the bottom of the flight plate is the grippy layer.
Mm-hmm.
Sturdy, stiff rim.
Right.
So the flight plate's the same plastic. The rim's a different plastic.
Yeah.
Which is what Tone is.
Yeah.
The whole rim isn't, but.
I don't know. Yeah, I'd be curious to see if it actually looks different than Overmold or Tone. But it'd be really funny. What would be crazy is if it was Tone, but they got to the patent and then, like,
then Clash, like, figured it out, but didn't know it was patented.
Yeah.
Spin Zone. But no, it is. I'm very excited to see disc golf manufacturers trying something new, even if it is similar to Tone.
I get more excited for like posts like that than just about anything in disc golf.
Because they called it a soft, grippy skin. What could that mean? That's exciting.
It does sound pretty hype.
Yeah, I don't know what that means, but I like it.
Skin.
So I'm very excited to get my hands on some, try it out. But we'll see what it ends up turning into. But that's what a lot of people were commenting and saying, like, that they thought the way it was announced was because the Tone plastic has made such a splash that Latitude's like, we've been working on this for years. Are you kidding me?
Might so, be.
Could be. Very interesting thing to look at. All right, let's take some questions from you over on Twitter. I tweeted on X, actually, and said, any questions for today's Grip Locked episode? And I'm going to just kind of go down here.
There might not be any good ones.
And just see. This is a funny one from Shay Stevens. He said, is your favorite part of Trevor's trivia beating Connor or watching Connor get frustrated when Trevor tries to help him? Just beating Connor is the better part. It is funny when Trevor like starts to help and he starts to squirm a little bit, but I'm just in for the win. In for the win.
Did you see the putt that Jason B's talking about?
I did. It was pretty bad.
Bottom of the basket, jumped out.
Were they the same baskets we just used?
I don't know if they were Latitude baskets or not.
I don't know. They were blue is all I could think of, and they were also.
Yeah. That add up.
Whenever you see blue, it just makes my gut hurt now. This is a fun one from Adam Jorgensen saying, being a barely pre-COVID disc golf fan and player, is there any way the DGPT could support a second tour like the PGA Champions Tour? One that sees older players that can't really compete for victories on the main tour but can still go out and throw 1,000-plus rated rounds.
I don't think they could – it could be a full tour, but I think especially once you get some of the older players, you could do, like, a few events throughout the year and make a big deal about it and, like, call it, like, the Legends Tour, and people would watch that.
No, I think their best bet is similar to the, like, skins they did at the
right.
USDGC.
Right.
Like, make it exhibition events.
Yeah.
Where you just get Johnny McRae, Ken Climo.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a tour.
Dave Fellberg and Barry Schultz together and, like, make a exhibition event the day before, on, like, Wednesday before everything tees off on Thursday. I mean, we would show up to that 100% of the time. Very fun. Jason Dunwald said, did Paul just lose his best shot at an elite or major title this year to extend his streak along with Ricky? Talking about the Swedish Open, was that his best chance to get to 14 years?
You could argue yes based on the fact that the field is only going to get stronger over there. But you also could argue that he's still like finding his game and improving this year. So, no, I think his best chance is at Worlds.
You think it's his best chance, like... Really? Like, statistically, you think that's a better chance than more?
Statistically, no. But I would say that Worlds would be like the next best, and it's somewhat close.
Yeah. No. I definitely think this was his easiest shot at a win.
It was definitely the easiest.
But and especially considering he started off with the hot round, he was in the lead after round one.
It's
which
surprising
is like,
to see him squander it in round two.
But I do agree that of the rest of the ones, probably he'll have one or two ones in Europe still that he will have a good shot at, but you do have to think Worlds is one of the top ones. If you have to give a yes or no answer, does Paul tie Ricky? Does he get to 14 years in a row? Like, does he get in a lead or major this year?
No.
Yeah. Wow. All right. I don't know. If I had a gun to my head, I had to answer that. I'd probably say no, just because
odds are on your side.
Odds are on your side, but it won't surprise me at all.
I won't be shocked, but yeah, it's. I mean, the odds are heavily against him when you have players that are taking up all the wins, you know?
Yeah.
It's tough.
Vincent, we'll answer this one quick. He said, any updates on what we can expect from Foundation for Worlds? Any special events or anything? Can't wait to see y'all again. No specific updates, but there will be an event and release every day.
There's
so
be
release
a lot of stuff
and event
going on.
Every day of Worlds. So you're not going to miss out on that. Jeezy said, if Kevin Jones for $25,000 a month is true, how does Innova possibly make money off that contract? How much disc sales need to make that contract worth seem way, way, way overpriced?
Innova didn't sign him for $25,000.
Now, the Yuli was talking about
his Prodigy deal
that Kevin was getting paid $25,000 a month. That's what Yuli was talking about on Tour Life.
Well, the funny thing is we all had this idea that like KJ and Vina were getting like scalped basically by Innova for like less, but then this whole cottage cheese situation has got me thinking.
Yeah, Vino might be in a situation where he's making a similar amount There's no way he's making more.
Vino's
probably in a situation where he's making a similar amount. Kevin Jones, if the $25,000 a month is true, and that's what he was getting from Prodigy, is definitely making less from Innova. There's just no shot.
Yeah, no way.
Oh, Ben, we aren't going to fully answer this. He said, can you cover the Silas diss track, like a deep dive? Love Silas, but I think he went to 0 to 100 one quick.
Too quick.
Yeah, I mean, Silas Schultz went, if you didn't see this, obviously we're not going to fully talk about it because it's like, it's a fun storyline, but there's no real meat to the story. But he went off on Drew Gibson.
It was pretty intense.
And it got personal quick. It was electric.
I think he did go 0 to 100, maybe too quick, but it was refreshing to see a well-put-together disc golf musical track.
Yeah. It was also refreshing just to see some actual drama in disc golf.
Yeah, not this fake drama.
Not this fake drama that people get mad at Brody over. Donald Stoner said, is it a good or bad thing if Silva breaks Page's record of consecutive wins, considering most of Silva's wins are at a weak field? A win is a win. I'm just saying it's annoying to have a record broken, and people are like, but actually Page played a better field.
To be fair, Page was also quite a few years back, so her field wasn't even as strong as the full field now. I would say good thing, because we need FPO storylines, and it would give us an FPO storyline.
I'm gonna agree, good thing, and I'm also going to agree that.
And she's going to have to win some really good events here down the stretch.
Silva beating Evelina and Henna has to be pretty comparable to Paige beating Kat.
Tough to say.
Because, I mean, if you go back, Paige was beating Katrina Allen, Valerie Jenkins, Sarah Hokum.
FPO from like 2016 through 2019 at this point, it's a Twilight Zone. I don't even understand. I don't know what's real and what's fake.
Okay, there you go. We have a three-peat from Hunter Reynolds here. First question, is Calvin ever going to win a major? Is he ever going to win one? I think statistically he will win one.
34.
He'll win at least one, but I think he's going to end his career and just be like one of the greats that's not talked about as much as he should because he only had three majors or two majors. So I don't think he's going to – he has to rattle some off here to get – to have his major – resume match how good of a player he's been.
It's tough, man. It's tough to win majors because here's the thing. Like, Gannon, you could say Gannon right now is the best young player with, like, the longest time period to win majors. Let's say Gannon is, what, 18?
Mm-hmm.
So let's say he's got 15 years left of his disc golf prime. If he were to win, average a major a season, which is insane, by the way, he'd be one major less than Paul McBeth.
Yeah.
That's so, like, in today's climate, like, having anybody, like, having a career, and Calvin's different because he did play a lot of his career in a different time. But, like, for Gannon, if he were to play 15 more years and end up with 7 or 8 majors, that's really good, even though it's only half of what those guys had, because nobody's going to do that anymore. Now, people say that before Tiger Woods came along, too, so I might just be being foolish, but it's a lot harder.
Yeah. Is Eagle slowly becoming himself again, also from Hunter Reynolds?
I don't know, man. He hasn't completely figured it out yet, it seems like. He was in a tough place right now. He's in a bit of a rut. But yeah. I still believe in him.
I believe in him, yeah. I think give it time. And then final question from him, he said, was Innova just saving up for years waiting for other companies to fail?
Potentially.
I definitely – we said this during COVID. We said it on Griplocked that Innova was either geniuses or stupid and that only time was going to tell because they were the ones that just refused to sign big-name players. Like, time and time again, we saw it happen where players like Ricky left them. We saw them not be able to land a few guys that went into free agency. They were able to land Calvin again, but we thought that was questionable. We didn't know if they were going to be able to. They ended up being able to. But we said it over and over of, like, time is going to tell if Innova were geniuses or not. Here we are 3 years later. They're the company that just doesn't have guys that aren't worth it locked into a bunch of money on their payroll, yeah. Which means they're the guys that probably are on the fattest stack of cash.
Yeah.
So as players start to become available and other companies just can't sign them, Innova's the ones that are like, well, hey, you're not going to get a better offer than this anywhere else.
Nothing but facts from Big Hunt.
So that, you know, I definitely think Innova could have just played the long game and played it very well.
In a market that explodes and then declines, you know, like it did, it pays to be the tortoise, not the hare. You know, it pays to play the long game and wait things out, because sometimes and you have there's two things that happen. A, the market can continue to go up or at least stay where it was, and you can be like, dang, we missed a lot of opportunity. But you're already Innova, so you're already huge. You're not as focused on that. But B, if it does go back down, you can be like, well, we didn't throw all our chips in the table. So we didn't take on any losses. We just had an above average time period, and now we're back to normal.
Yeah.
And that's what Innova did.
All right, we're going to take two more questions. This one's from A. Mills. He said, why are manufacturers, Discraft in this scenario, not paying for their elite team players to go to Europe? I see Corey Ellis, for instance, selling stuff to fund his trip, which is crazy because Corey Ellis is the reigning champion of the European Open.
That is a bad look. I got to debate night that.
We all know that they make enough money to send every single elite member overseas. Well, hashtag grow the sport.
To be fair, we don't know that. It is really expensive to send players overseas. I think that getting your travel paid for is a pretty highly valued contract clause that not a lot of players have. Now, I will say that if my defending European champion had some kind of issue, we're scraping together the money to get him over there. That's bad.
Yeah, I would have to agree.
Like, that's a terrible look to have him posting fundraising. The dude won the tournament for you last year.
Yeah, that is.
Get him over there.
That is interesting. But no, you can't. I don't question when companies don't send everyone over because, like.
It is hecka expensive, though.
It's almost a nightmare scenario for them because, like, he's probably not going to win again. He's not been playing very well this year. And, like, they need AB over there.
You're talking $1,500, $2,000 a person.
And if you're trying to decide between do we send AB and Adam Hammes over or do we send Corey Ellis?
Yeah, it's tough.
Probably should send AB and Adam Hammes. But, hey.
Adam Hammes.
Final question that we're going to take. How long do you think it would take to eat a DX AVR?
Do I get any kind of sauce?
That's the only question. How long do you think it would take to eat a DX AVR?
Okay, let me be real then. I think it would probably take me, because I would try to do it without dying, so I'm only taking like a little bite a day. Give me a year.
That's fair.
Like over a year, 365 days, I'm going to take off. Divide that DX AVR into 365 pieces. I feel like I can manage to eat that a day. You're just kind of chewing on it throughout the day.
It's a rough year
of your life.
I feel like I'm blending it up into a smoothie.
That's cheating. That's got to be cheating.
So give me 6 months.
6 months, okay.
Yeah.
Dang, you just had to be better, didn't you? Twice as fast.
150 or whatever, 180, darn 180 you, whatever days it is. 180 some days.
180
pieces? 180 pieces, and I'm throwing that into a morning smoothie.
That's cheating. If it's a smoothie, give me one day. I'm going to throw it down.
Well, you said you want. I'm also trying to survive.
No, I'm going to the doctor right after. Pump the stummy.
No, that's fair.
I ate it.
That's true.
Didn't say I had to digest it.
There you go. So how long is it going to take you to eat it then? To blend it up in the smoothie? How long are you consuming that smoothie?
I mean, gosh. I don't know how much liquid plastic goes into a disc. You need one of them, one of the Vitamixes that heats it up enough to like really get it melted down. That's gross, dude. And then I'm just throwing it.
An hour? You doing it within an hour?
No, probably not. Probably take me all day.
Okay, so 6 hours.
Sure.
6 hours. Trevor's final answer for the DX AVR, 6 hours. My answer, 6 months. That's grip lock. We'll see you for the preview show of Des Moines.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.